there is no inherent difference between a will and a living trust vis-a-vis estate tax. Not a single bit of difference. Every bit of planning that you want to do in a will, you can do in a trust and vice versa.
If you're interested in how highly successful investors overcome limitations and become unstoppable forces of success, you're in the right place. The Conscious Investor Podcast features weekly conversations with real estate investing experts and delivers a Monday Mindset episode to help launch your week with intention. If you believe success is for everyone willing to think, then do, these conversations will be your weekly rocket fuel. Welcome back, Conscious Investors. For those of you who are like my husband and I, you might be wondering, do I need a will? Do I need a trust? What's the difference? Are we too late? Is it too much effort, too much work? And that is what we're going to tackle today. If you're watching over on the YouTube channel, you're seeing a lot of different people in the space already. You're not just hearing my voice, but you're seeing that there are a total of four people in the house right now, and it's really exciting. So I'm super excited that my husband is actually here in the scene, in the studio with me, live and in person. And at this point, man, we just got to give a shout out to Steve because he ruptured his distal bicep and is scheduled for surgery in a few days. And so he's in nice comfy clothes and we're just going to keep loving on him and cheering him on. So, but also in the house, we have a really good friend of mine, and you hear me speak about mode wealth like what every episode, and how when you need those strategies, when you need everybody on your side, you need to turn to mode wealth. You need tax strategies, and you don't want to have your CPA and your insurance person and your attorney all speaking different languages. You want them all on your side, collaborating on your behalf, not trying to have their ego going along, coaxing along because they want their way, right? You want everybody working on your behalf. And that's what happens over at Mode Wealth. And in our experience working with Mode Wealth, it's been absolutely fantastic in supporting tax savings. And also, as you're going to see, allowing us to better prepare our family for future events. So I just wanted, and also in the house is a new friend of mine, Wallace, and he is going to guide us through this whole process and teach us all about wills and what we entrust and what we need to know. But before we dive in, I just want to say hi and let's let the Conscious Investor hear you. And so, Melvin, why don't you go ahead and say hi and tell us where you're at geographically right now?
I am in Salem, Oregon, beautiful Salem, Oregon. We've got like smoky skies from a forest fire that no one can seem to locate. But it's a little weird outside, and this is my last day in this office. So I'm moving to a different office, and we're all excited about growth and looking forward to helping as many people as we can.
I love it. Thank you so much, Melvin. And you know what, Conscious Investor, if you haven't heard the solo episode that Melvin and I recorded, I'm sorry, I don't have the episode number in front of me, but we'll try to put a link to it in the show notes. You want to go back and listen to that because it's all going to be tax strategies for you. Okay. So make sure you go back, listen to that episode. And Wallace, welcome to the Conscious Investor Podcast. Where are you at?
I am just outside Portland, Oregon today, Julie.
All right. It's really cool that you guys are in close proximity. Thank you for letting us hear your voice. And my wonderful husband, Steve, where are you at?
Right here.
All right. So, well, I just want to say thanks for everyone for joining and collaborating. And Conscious Investor, this is a full disclosure moment that Steve and I were talking and we realized we're not prepared for a major life event. And if you've listened to the show for a long time, you know that my dad suddenly dropped dead 7 years ago. And so shame on us because we know better. We know we need to have these things set in place so that if one of us were to pass, what's going to happen to our kids? We don't want our kids to become custody of the state or something like that, right? I know enough to make me stupid on this topic. And so we realized we really need to take initiative. Initially, 7 years ago, before we moved up to North Idaho, we actually were taking initiative. We actually met with a local attorney, someone that we knew, we liked, we trusted. We started this process. It seemed overwhelming. accounting, we had more assets. It was so much to document. And so fortunately, we sold a bunch of that off. And so Wallace, it's going to make it really easy for us now. But what all that to say is that this process doesn't have to be as difficult, I think, as what we were making it out to be. And it's really critical. So if you're feeling that same way, like what's going to happen to our kids if we were to suddenly pass away? I mean, Steve and I go places. We used to go to the gym almost every morning. We'll be doing that soon. We'll be back. But together, what if unfortunately there was a car accident? And I don't like to live in the what if world, but we really want to make sure that we're caring for our kids and also preparing our assets to be cared for in the right way. So with that, Wallace, I'm going to have two requests. Everybody, when we speak today, we're going to need to speak up, I think. And then two, Wallace, you have the floor, my friend. We want to learn. I've got a note paper. I am ready. We are here to help guide the conscious investor and the Holly family at the same time.
All right. Great. Well, it is a pleasure to be here. I noticed you touched on a couple of things, Julie, in your introduction. So I'm going to try to address those things as we go along. But the biggest difference, I would say, between a will and a trust is that wills take effect upon the death of the person who made that will. Trusts, on the other hand, are simply contracts between the person who makes the trust and the trustee, whereby the trustee has the right to hold and manage assets for the benefit of specific persons or person during the trustor's life and even after the trustor is deceased. That's the biggest difference between the two of them. One of the things you touched on a couple of times in your intro really is helpful in determining when a family would want to have a trust versus when they would want to have a will. And it really boils down to the extent to which that family is still in the acquisition mode of assets. And if you're still acquiring assets, you're still out in the game, in the rat race, depending on how you call it or what you call it, you'll be busy acquiring those assets, and you don't always want to think about the fact that you have to take title in those assets in the name of the trust or in the name of the trust you want it to go to if you use a living trust. Whereas if you have a will, you can take title in whatever name that you want to take it in. You can set up LLCs. You can do all this stuff. And it's a lot easier to buy and sell your asset base when you have a will as your primary disposition instrument as opposed to a trust. And so that's really the biggest difference between how they work and how they operate. But when you have young kids, especially when your kids are minority age, you want to have either a will or trust because you can accomplish this with both things. You want to have a will or a trust because you want to get into those documents, what happens and who you want the kids to be overseen by and who you want them to be raised by in the event that you pass away. And those are things that you can do in both instruments, although in the case of a will, it won't take effect until after you die.
Okay, that's really interesting. So let me just make sure that I'm tracking along correctly, because I want to make sure that I am tracking along correctly. Conscious investor, we're literally mapping out part of our future right now. And I hope that if you're on the treadmill, in the car, walking the dog, doing the dishes, whatever you're doing right now, I hope that this is hitting home and resonating with you. And if you have a will or a trust, maybe you want to revisit that. This is something we really need to be aware of. So, because accidents happen, and Steve is a total proof of that with his surgery coming up for a torn distal bicep. Unfortunately, that's all it is. Okay. So what we're saying is, hey, we're in acquisition mode. We don't want to have to worry about, okay, we have to buy and sell and transact under a trust because it's going to feel cumbersome. And we are in acquisition mode right now. So if we establish a will, then we can buy, sell, and transact. And we can do that under any entity. This is a part I wanted to make sure and clarify. Then all of those elements, whatever we acquire, will still be contained within the will.
That's right, because a will doesn't take effect until you pass away. But in a typical will, you will make provisions for a couple of things. You make provisions for who your personal representative is going to be. You'll make provisions for how you want various assets to be distributed. And you'll make provisions for minor children, as we discussed before. And in connection with providing for your property and how that gets distributed, you'll make recommendations or you'll make requests or what they call bequests to your personal representative of how they distribute certain pieces of real estate and certain pieces of personal property. That's how the will flow, and that's how the distributions will be made. Again, you can do the same thing in a trust. It's just that the trust requires, in order for it to be completely and totally effective, the trust requires that you take title in the name of the trust in order for the asset to actually be owned by the trust. And the primary thing that happens if you pass away with a trust, but property outside of that trust, property that's not owned by the trust when you die, the primary thing that happens is that that property has to be probated. You have to have some sort of a will in order for that piece of property to be legally bequeathed or devised to some person. So you can have a trust and it can have your assets in it. But if you have half of your assets outside the trust, then when you pass away, those assets won't have anywhere to go unless and until you also have a will that disposes of them. So a lot of people historically have set up a trust because a lot of times lawyers would sell it on the idea of, well, you can avoid probate. And in a lot of states, probate is expensive. California, for example, probate costs a percentage of what the estate is worth. Here in Oregon, probate isn't a percentage. Lawyers get paid a fee for their hourly rate or however they do it, but it's not typically based on a percentage of the overall assets that are probated. And so people, historically, they got really wound up about the idea of probate avoidance, probate avoidance, probate avoidance. But the only reason or the only way that actually works is if the trust is fully funded. All of the assets that a person owns are in the trust. If they're not in the trust, then they have to be probated. So you get back to having to have a will anyway.
Okay, let's all be real. We're all very ambitious people that are here on this call right now. We're all ambitious. And I could imagine if we were to set up a trust and then, oh gosh, you know what, honey, we got to change the deed over on our house. We've got to redo all of that. And we'll get to it tomorrow. We'll get to it tomorrow. I can see how this would happen reasonably for busy professionals who are wearing a lot of hats, where with a trust, part of it would get left out.
I'll give you a personal example, and that is the shoemaker's kids. My wife and I historically always had a will. We kept it up to date. It was very easy. Once every couple of years, we'd take a look at it and decide whether we wanted to make changes. Our youngest kids were starting to get near the end of high school. And in 2018, we decided, yeah, we're pretty much where we're going to be. And if we acquire another piece of property, maybe it'll be, we might acquire one or two more, but that's going to be it. We can handle this. We'll set up a trust. We set up a trust. And guess what? It wasn't until June of this year, 2022, that we finally got around to the bank to change the last bank account over to the name of our trust.
Oh my gosh.
One of us had died, interim period, and my wife has been battling stage 4 metastatic breast cancer for 6 years. If one of us had died in the interim, we would have had to probate that bank account because it wasn't in our trust until June of this year. And I do this for a living. So that tells you a challenge for everybody to get everything in order and to keep it in order. And that's the critical part, keeping it in order and keeping your trust fully funded.
Wow. Okay. That's
any asset outside will have to be probated.
That's 4 years later.
Yep. And if for some reason you don't have a will, you don't have a will and you have assets outside, then you have what they call an intestacy problem. You have assets that there's no distributional directive for. And that becomes even more challenging because if you have blended families, if you have exes, if you have people that have a legal claim, they may jump in there and decide that some of that asset is theirs. They may file a petition in the court during an intestacy proceeding.
Wallace, for you personally, and to the audience, this was not a procured question. I literally didn't know he was going to say that, and he doesn't know I'm going to ask this question. So I don't know his answer, so he may call me crazy. But if you had access to Mode Wealth and you were getting reminders based on the checklist and to-do list, which sends you out automatic reminders reminding you of that last item constantly. And let's say you did taxes with us, and upon tax preparation, we reminded you, hey, we need to get that so that your trust is fully funded. Do you feel like that would have aided in you getting that done sooner?
Yes, if my wife had also been getting those requests.
She's agreeing with that.
Yeah, if both Karma and I had been copied, yeah, it would have gotten taken care of a lot sooner.
Got it.
I'm confessing that I'm the slug.
Yeah, I'm in the same position.
I'm the slug. Yeah.
Okay. That's really, really interesting. And I love that. And Melvin, you're right. I get these reminders, these text reminders about different things that we're supposed to be doing. And it's like, oh, I got to do that. I got
to
do that.
I can attest to the reminders because I get them all the time. And they're so regular. Sometimes I put off the reminders because I know I'll get another reminder.
Same way, Steve. I do the same thing. But Karma does not let moss grow under her feet. So if she got more than one reminder, I'd be in the car and we'd be going down to the bank to do it.
Yep. Oh, I love it. Okay, so I have a few different questions here now.
Absolutely. Fire away.
Before we go on. Okay, one super easy question, I think, is how often, once something, a will is established, how often should we revisit it? You said you and Carmen revisited yours every couple of years. How would we know? What were the indicators that we should revisit it?
There are sort of bellwethers. Having children is one. Children leaving the nest is another, although I'm told that they don't really ever do that anymore fully. Children getting married, having grandchildren. There's a few of those bellwethers out there. Otherwise, as often as you feel like you need to. I mean, some people, I grew up in a family where my parents were talking about death and their wills all the time. I don't know why they did that, but they did. They talked about it all the time. My mom would say things like, oh, when I die, you're going to get this thing. And my dad talks about his will all the time. Anytime we disappointed him or did something he didn't like, he'd say, you guys are out of the will. So that word was bandied about constantly in our family. But most of the time, it's just whatever people feel comfortable with, other than the big bellwethers. If you look at it every 5 years as your kids are growing up and as you're moving along, that's probably enough.
Yeah, our family.
But this gets back to, the question gets back to one of the things that's really critical to remember about a trust is that you're going to be revisiting it a lot more frequently with a trust because you're going to want to make sure that you've got all your assets corralled and that they're all titled properly in the name of the trust.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, just the way you're describing a trust and knowing my tendency to neglect in professions, we all tend to neglect ourselves and we serve our clients really well. And so I could see Steve and I on the trust end of things being not just 4 years out, but maybe 8 years out, you know? And so, and not by nature of us being slugs at all, but just by nature of being ambitious and going after and serving our clients. So I really love that. We've dealt with probate situations. Steve's really dealt with probate situations in the real estate space where it's gotten nasty. Yeah. I don't know. Can you share about how like that's gone? And then can we talk about how we could avoid that or make probate easier? And then the piggyback to that, when we're done with that part, I'd love to hear the tax implications, Melvin, and to say like, okay, tax-wise, where do we stand here? What's the best strategy? I mean, if we go with a will.
Yeah, let's dispel one big rumor or one big misperception, I should say, right off the bat. There is no inherent difference between a will and a living trust vis-a-vis estate tax. Not a single bit of difference. Every bit of planning that you want to do in a will, you can do in a trust and vice versa.
Okay.
Anytime you have to set up trust in order to avoid taxes, things like generation skipping trust or marital trust or those kinds of transfers in order to avoid estate taxes, you can do that just as effectively in either instrument. No inherent planning in either one of them. You have to do the planning yourself. You have to work with an expert who knows how to structure the documents themselves and structure what your objectives are in view of what the current tax laws are. That's probably another bellwether. In the event of a radical tax law change in the estate taxes, that's probably a good time to revisit one's will or trust as well. But you've got to do the planning inside the instrument. They don't themselves come with any guaranteed way to minimize taxes. Okay. The biggest difference is that probate is the process that starts when a decedent dies with a will. And it's when the court appoints the personal representative, they read the will, they interpret the will, and the court instructs the personal representative to distribute the assets per the will and per the court's interpretation of the will. If there are no disputes, there's no arguments, there's no nothing, then the distributions, the bequests and devises go according to the will. As Steve's experienced with, and as all of us have had some experience with here, that's not always the case. It's not always clear. There are sometimes our arguments and sometimes discussions. And that's the biggest difference between a will and a trust, is if you suspect that there may be a fight, it's going to be a lot easier to have that fight outside of court with a trustee dealing with it than it is with it dealing with it in probate.
Okay.
And heaven forbid, if you die without a will and you go through the process that's known as intestacy, that's the thing you really want to avoid.
That's exactly why we're having this conversation right now. And Conscious Investor, I hope that this is all like just sinking into you as well. This isn't a scary, cumbersome process. You can clearly see there are distinctions between these two different, between a trust and a will. And I'm sure already you're making a determination as to what you're leaning towards and gravitating towards. And now it's just a matter of, okay, let me take the next step. Let me call Wallace. Let me get this scheduled. Let me start this process. Now, I was always under the impression that, now this leads to two questions, and I'm sorry, honey, you're not telling your story yet. Steve doesn't mind because he's like, I didn't even know I was coming into this podcast episode. So you're being a good sport. I appreciate
it. My kind of guy.
He's such a good sport. So I was always under the impression that because Steve and I are married, if something were to happen because our assets are held in both of our names, that we wouldn't have to go through any type of probate. There wouldn't be anything. It would just automatically just kind of go into whoever was still remaining.
That may be the case. It depends on how you take those assets or how you titled those assets. If you own the assets as tenants by the entirety in Oregon, if it's real estate, or joint tenancy with rights of survivorship, then if one of you predeceases the other, then the survivor would get those assets automatically. And that's called by operation of law. That's how that would go.
That is fantastic. Mm-hmm. So I think what I was trying to think, what I was thinking through is there a way to avoid probate?
There are a couple of ways. Let's revisit probate. Probate is the process for reviewing the assets, appointing a personal representative if there's a will, or if there's not. It's about finding out whether there's the existence or the authenticity or validity of a will. And if there's not a will, you can still initiate probate, but you have to go based on what they call the laws of intestacy. And that can be scary for people because it may not go according to the person's wishes. And you can avoid probate by having other ways of distributing assets. And we've just talked about one of those, which is titling your assets as either joint tenants with rights of survivorship or as tenants by the entirety, or you can have a trust. That's what a trust does. It is that legal arrangement, that contract between the person who sets it up, the trustor or settlor, and the trustee for the management and ownership of those assets, both during a person's life and with the view toward distribution after that person's deceased. Main ways you can avoid probate.
Okay, that's amazing. So then what else? How cumbersome, how tedious, how long should it take if we want to go down the route of reading a will? And what kind of things should we have prepared for you so that we can streamline the process?
Either process should take about the same amount of time, candidly. A will be a little bit less time because of the asset titling activities that you have to do with a trust, but they should take about the same amount of time. And essentially, as we talked about before, the things that you want to do is make a checklist of all your assets, make a list of all of the important information and dates about yourselves and your children, discuss your children's ages, discuss what you want to have happen with your assets, and discuss what you want to have happen with the rearing and the protection of your children if something happens to you before they're of majority age. Those are really the only things you need to do. We tend to put together, because we're all busy people and we're humans and a lot of us like checklists, we tend to put together these really exotic checklists, but those are really the big three things you need to be focused on. Type and nature of your assets, what you want done with them, and how you want your kids to be raised and protected if something happens to the two of you. That's it.
I love it. And conscious investor, can you hear how simple that is? I know I personally like to overcomplicate things, but initially when those of you on YouTube just saw Steve nod his head when I said I like to overcomplicate things, Melvin's probably experienced that a time or two. So it's true. And it's because I'm curious. And so that sometimes curiosity leads into overcomplicating things. But initially when we tried to set up our will, there was a very lengthy process and it seemed very overwhelming. Granted, our kids were very little at the time, but that's also a critical time to be having a will set in place. So accessible seems like something that we could accomplish.
Yes, it really is easy to do. And especially with reminders and knowing that it's something high on the priority list for the couple and for the family to do, it really is quite easy to put together and to do and to get done efficiently.
And with a will, you'll have access to our portal, which you can make changes when they come up from the convenience of your couch. So that's another benefit of adding the element of technology through Mode Wealth with this process. We try to make it as simple as possible.
Wow, that is so simple and so convenient. Amazing. So Wallace, is there anything else that we should know as we venture down this path that we should be wide-eyed aware of? Maybe the questions of blind sides, the questions we don't need to ask because we don't deal with this on a daily basis.
Honestly, not really. It really is a pretty straightforward process. People can complicate it more than they need to. And I will say that sometimes, depending on how detailed they want to be or how detailed a person wants to get, vis-a-vis a particular asset or their assets in general, it can take a little bit of time, energy to get the drafting right and to make sure that the assets are going where a person desires. But other than that, there aren't any gotchas and there aren't any traps. I will say one other thing philosophically that Melvin knows, and it has always sort of been my guiding principle about how things work in the law, but it's basically this, and that is that if you really look at it closely, there's not a single document that has ever been written. There's not a single contract that's ever been entered into that cannot be amended, modified, changed, or even revoked if the parties to that agreement or the parties that are bound by it desire to have a communication and a relationship with each other, and they discuss how and if and under what circumstances they want to change it. As long as they want to communicate, there's not a single document out there, not a single agreement that can't be changed. In fact, in the law, certain trusts can't exist even longer than a life in being plus 21 years. And so everything eventually terminates. It's only when people no longer want to have a relationship with each other that they stop communicating, and therefore they run to the documents, and the documents become what they fight about. And so that tells you that the only real reason to have the trust and the will is in case something is really unclear, or in case people are prone to fight about something, or in case you really want something specific to happen, it's imperative that there be a writing, because if the people stop wanting to communicate with each other, then the only thing they have is the document. But hopefully they'll always get along and they'll want to communicate with each other, and therefore the documents are of utility. But they simply are a guide. They're not absolute. Hope that helps.
Yeah, that is really helpful. And all this is super helpful information. Melvin, do you have anything on the tax side of things that, like, the unfortunate end of life type things that people should be aware of?
Well, outside of the necessity for life insurance, right? Just because it helps pay for those things without the worry of taxation if done right, if it's not a modified endowment contract or something like that. But at Mode Wealth, we have this general rule. Melvin talks about taxes while people are alive, and Wallace talks about taxes and estates after people die. So as far as it relates to estate tax, I would defer to him as the expert. But while living and in preparation for the payment of estate tax, if it is, or if you're of the type of asset class where that's necessary, my suggestion would be life insurance. And of course, I can show you how to use it to where it benefits you while live as well, yep, which we can talk about on a different podcast. But Wallace, back to you.
I cannot stress life insurance enough to the audience. I just can't do it. I mean, I don't know if any of you are football fans. I happen to be a football fan, and I'm a fan of pro football in particular. But if you look at the ownership of professional football teams, there's hardly a group that has maintained their ownership generation after generation after generation, because these franchises have become so valuable that when a person dies, the family has to sell the asset to somebody else in order to pay the estate taxes and the fees related to the estate. And probably the best example was the Miami Dolphins and Joe Robbie. He was the founder of the team. He owned the team from 1966 or 67 until he died. And they named a stadium after him. And when he died, his family didn't have the money to pay the estate taxes, so they had to sell the team.
Wow.
And it's happened over and over and over again, where the estate taxes just crush. It'll be interesting to see what happens with the Cowboys when Jerry Jones dies. He bought that team for 45, 50 million bucks. It's worth several billion dollars now, including the stadium. At 55% estate tax, heaven only knows where they're going to get the cash to provide for that. So there you go.
Especially
important for closely held family businesses. How many times I've seen families have to go into massive debt. You know, it's another personal anecdote I won't share too much detail over or about, but happened to our family. We had to sell most of the assets that comprised a very lucrative business in order to pay the estate taxes. And so businesses have to be chopped up. Assets have to be sold. In some cases, the family's prime asset.
Wow. Is there any way? I feel like there's some way to avoid the estate tax.
There are a lot of ways, but you have to really get on it early. As soon as you start seeing right now, it's 10 million. It's likely to drop again to 5 million or less in total estate value. If you start seeing a real incline in asset values, there are a lot of things you can do to plan, but you got to get on it early and you got to get on it right and you got to do it. And there's only one real way to buttress and fortify it, and that's with life insurance. The only way to pay or to have the cash to pay the taxes.
Wow. Okay. I do want to ask this, and we all know that we all like to do things above board. So I'm not asking a question to be deviant, but I know some people will file an LLC in a different state. Some people like Nevada, some people like Wyoming. Is there a way to have to go through everything in what, like we used to live in California? It is tax heavy there. If you lived in a tax heavy state, could you have everything held in a different state where it's friendlier?
Yes and no.
And above board.
Yeah. Some of that works. Some of it doesn't. There's community property issues to deal with. Every case is a case-by-case basis. But primarily, you're going to get taxed where your residence is. And so if you're a resident, a state with high taxes, you're going to get the full complement of those taxes hitting you.
Conscious investor, even if you're like, oh, I'm not the owner of a pro football team, you don't feel that you have much. I know that when my dad just drops dead at the age 69 and a half, it's like, actually, he was freshly 69. It's like, if he would have turned 70, his life insurance would have expired. And he's like everything that we talked about, it would have been procrastinated. But that has been a tremendous provision for my mom and her well-being. So it's like, it's these end of life type conversations are really critical conversations to be having and to ensure that you call Mode Wealth, get yourself set up with the right life insurance and the right life insurance that helps you now and later, and having a will set up or a trust, if that's the route you want to go, and talking with professionals like Wallace to make sure that you're efficiently going down the best path possible.
Just a final comment, which I wouldn't have time to get too deep into, of course, but life insurance combined with entity work can, in some cases, really, really help to reduce or completely eradicate estate taxes. So it's not that it can't happen. It's just, it's a case by case basis.
That's really good to know. Do you have any questions?
Well, now that we're done, I'm going to go put on my sweatshirt like your husband, because I took mine off for this podcast to put on my polo.
I wanted to hear Steve's story. I never got
I did
to hear
too.
Steve's story.
Oh, look at that. Okay. All right.
Can we please hear his story?
You have a very gentle voice, so you're going to have to speak up for this.
Over the years, you know, I've dealt with a lot of different real estate transactions that ended up going into probate. And everyone's very negative when dealing with probate. I think it mainly stems from people just not understanding what could have prevented it, or what the process involves. But two cases most recently, dealing with a transaction, and one of the sellers died during escrow, which we thought the whole thing was going to fall apart, of course. And it ended up taking several months. But that's when I learned about what you were talking about, the joint tenancy with right of survivorship. I mean, I've been doing this 14 years and I just learned that little nuance just this past year. And because of that, shortly thereafter, I was working with another couple. His wife was diagnosed with a terminal cancer, and they were not savvy in these things at all. Just awesome people, but have no idea how that process worked. There was a very real likelihood that she would die during the sale process. And I was able to advise them to get it into, because they did not have with right of survivorship and how they held title. And they were able to do that before she passed. And it just prevented a lot of potential headache, because they did have a stepdaughter, if I remember right, who they anticipated would come back and argue and say that part of the money should go to her and all that kind of stuff. So dotting your I's and crossing your T's ahead of time is important.
Critical.
Yep. Yeah. And there's some really funky laws out there. I mean, you know, you get 4 shares for spouses, you get 4 share for kids, and kids in some states are kids, whether or not adopted, whether or not step, whether or not kid means kid. Anybody that you had a parental relationship over or with, whether or not they were blood related or through marriage or anything, if you just had a kid live with you for 6 months and that kid deems himself or herself as your kid, some states are that broad and that aggressive. So count those people as kids, and they have a piece of the action. They get a 4th share. Every situation is a little bit unique, but there's an element of planning that needs to be done. It's not rocket science. It doesn't create too much brain damage. It's just a matter of getting it done and then revisiting it from time to time and making sure it's still consistent with what you want to do.
Don't put off till tomorrow what you can get done today. I've been telling myself that a lot lately.
Yeah. Or
prepare for the worst and hope for the best.
Unless your wife will do it, then you can put it off indefinitely.
And she'll do it.
Oh my gosh. No, that's bad advice.
Recorded, was it? That wasn't recorded, was it? We shut the recording off.
Oh, I love it. Well, I just want to, Wallace, I appreciate, I know this has been a very busy time of year at Move Wealth for both of you. And I appreciate your willingness to hop on this podcast recording session and share this information. It's critical information for everyone. And many of you are already working with Move Wealth and having a fantastic experience. And so if you are working with Move Wealth, then just give that nudge, say, hey, I need to get connected up with Wallace. I need to do this. Just you take that just first step. That's all you have to do. Just take that first step and say, okay, it's time for life insurance. And then just hop on the conveyor belt and let it happen. So Wallace said it's not going to be brain damage. So yeah, the Hollies are ready for the first step, right? Hey, can we get this done before he goes into surgery next week, Wallace?
I might die.
I just had to throw that in there. I don't think you've ever had surgery before, have you?
I've never had surgery.
Yeah. What I've learned about Wallace through this webinar is when he doesn't want to answer a question, he'll just not answer.
This is true.
Well, it's all a question of, we can probably get something done by Tuesday. Yeah.
We won't hold you to it. We're recording right now. Maybe I should, but.
Awesome.
Well, I appreciate your time. Thank you for sharing your expertise, both of you. And thanks for what you are providing as a service through Move Wealth. I appreciate it.
Of course. Yeah. Just as always, hop on, schedule yourself on the calendar and we'll get it going.
All right.
Awesome.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Amazing conscious investors, don't take this episode lightly. Most people don't want to talk about death or taxes. We're touching on both of them in this episode. We might even title this Death and Taxes, but this is an important topic and it is game-changing for the people that are left behind. So please take this to heart, take action. Don't just hear this and say, I can get to it tomorrow, because we all have stories. We're all old enough to where we have those accidental stories. And God forbid it happens to anyone of you or the people that you know, love, and trust, but it does happen. So be prepared. As always, adventure belongs on the trail, not in your investing or your personal life. So please make sure that if you're noticing adventure in your investing, please reach out. Let's see if you're a good fit to work with Three Keys Investments. If you are noticing adventure in your professional development elements, please make sure you reach out and see if our high performance coaching can serve you as well. You remember the links at the bottom. You can schedule a time for either of those type of sessions, and we'd love to help you. Live big, love bigger. What's the big deal about investing in a apartments? Why is it better than investing in a slew of single-family homes? I've compiled a lot of information on why investing in a multifamily, also known as apartments, will help you reach your investment goals. Head over to 3keysinvestments.com and download the Why Invest in Multifamily guide today.